Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jack?
The island.
They've attacked us, sabotaged us, abducted us, murdered us. We're not the only people on this island, and we all know it.
So I guess I'm out of the book club.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back.
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast for season 3, episode 11, Enter 7-7. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my question for everybody at the top of this episode is, when was the last time that you beat a computer at chess? Because mine was probably back around 1996. I was still playing Star Wars chess on the Gonzalez-I old computer, and then we got one with AOL on it, and that was the end of chess.
I feel like this is just an opportunity for Dave to brag about the last time he beat a computer at chess, because I have never beat a computer at chess, though I was in the chess club in elementary school.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I
I'm Joey Robinson.
And I don't think I've ever beaten a human in chess, let alone a computer. I don't know if I know how to play chess, or maybe have forgotten how to play chess. Either way, I get pretty waxed every time, regardless of opponent.
That means
can I teach you how to play chess?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. All right, cool.
I was going to say we could keep him as not being the chess player in case we're ever investigating a strange island locale and the one thing we don't want him to do is win at a chess game. But if we need to give Neil that power, Neil should be able to have that power. you're listening to the Storm of Lost Rewatch podcast. This is your first time joining us. Hello.
Hello.
There we go. We are rewatching the ABC series Lost. It is currently streaming online. We've been watching one episode a week since season 1, episode 1. We are up to season 3, episode 11. The show lasted for 6 seasons, which means some people might be watching this for the first time and not want to talk about anything that happens in latter seasons. Good news. This podcast is split up into sections. The first section is called The Calm. We will only be talking about things that happened on Lost through season 3, episode 11. Enter 7-7, this week's episode. Then we will have a short little break, followed by the Storm section, which is where we could talk about this episode of Lost in the context of all 6 seasons of Lost and the time that we've spent thinking about Lost, which is now like a decade. Anyway, not important. The important thing is you're listening to this show. If you take a look down at your podcasting device, you will see time codes for both The Calm and The Storm. That way, you get to have just the podcast that you want. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support us monetarily, go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There we have different levels of monthly subscription rates that gift you different bonus content. You could watch movies along with us. You could join the Slack and watch TV shows along with Neil. You can get bonus podcast episodes. And here in these special quarantine times, Joanna Robinson launched a very special podcast called Feels Like the First Time. Feels Like the First Time. It's called Feels Like the First Time.
Dude, what's happening? Yes, I do a bonus podcast called Feels Like the First Time, which you can get if you are a subscriber at any level of our Patreon. Usually I do it with buffering host Kristen Russo. Kristen's been like doing some stuff this summer that has tied her up, so I've been substituting with these fellas doing some stuff. We did X-Men recently, we did Pride and Prejudice, and then this last week we just did Bond, which means I got to watch some James Bond movies from the pre-Brosnan era, which I had never seen. Wild Ride. So you can listen to us talk about like my weird guesses about what is going to happen in a James Bond movie, and then my reactions to what did happen in the James Bond movie, which was nuttier than anything I could have guessed, probably. And then next up, you will be hearing from us an episode we actually recorded a long while ago, because we did a Feels Like the First Time for Avatar The Last Airbender. We recorded an episode before our co-host Neil watched it all with our Slack in our Patreon subscriber Slack. And we're about to watch the finale tomorrow. The series finale is tomorrow in the Slack watch, which means then Neil, and then we're going to watch the tremendous M. Night Shyamalan movie for our movie club, which is another Patreon perk. Patreon perks all over the place is the point. And then Neil will get to tell us all of his post-Avatar watching thoughts. So, and then Kirsten's going to come back. So that's what's going on with Feels Like the First Time. That is not the only way to hang out with us. You can, you can find us on Twitter at Storm Podcast. That's a good way to participate in like our Jungle of Kistery polls, which we'll get to later, et cetera. You can find out the latest of, you know, what we're planning to release over on our website, stormpodcast.com. There's a nice little calendar there, and you can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. We'll get to a couple of those emails, but first I want to hit a review that we got, from Elder Lobenho. Do you think that's right? I don't think I
Elder
know that.
Lobenho?
Yeah. I don't want to put the emphasis on the ho.
Elder Lobenho.
Okay. All right. So this review says, just the best 5 stars. As someone who loves these hosts, I'm an avid listener of Joanna Robinson and all of her Vanity Fair podcasts, and of Dave Gonzalez on Fighting the War Room, and loves Lost. I feel like this podcast is bred in a Dharma lab just for me, alongside number 8 bunnies and fish biscuit chomping polar bears. When Neil mentioned his love of P-Funk a few episodes early in season 3, that was just the icing on this already awesome cake. So thank you so much, Elderlo Beanho.
Yeah, fellow P-Funk fan. Fun fact, there is, and I was listening to some P-Funk the other day, there is a deep cut of P-Funk that is also based on 3 Blind Mice. So it's very related to some of the work we did with the James Bond Feels Like the First.
Wow.
There you go.
And then I'm just going to hit a few emails before we get into this episode. Julie wrote in, she had me at the title of this email, which is Saeed the best character? She said, before I get to the premise of my question, let me just thank Joanna and Mallory Rubin for touching on Juliet's off-island hair. As someone who is fortunate to be working from home, I have to ask why she doesn't just let her hair be wavy on the island. In my humble opinion, these are the important quarantine/lost parallels we need to be looking at. No need to put in effort during quarantine or while being stranded on an island. This is a quick aside from me, Joanna, from Julie's email. I just want to say that I got a text from Mallory Rubin this morning. Mallory joined us a couple episodes ago, and she said at the time that she had just started her a Lost rewatch. I got a text this morning. She has finished her Lost rewatch. So Mallory Rubin plowed right through all of Lost.
Somehow impressed and not surprised.
Yeah. That's classic Mal, I gotta say. All right. So back to Julie's email. On to Saeed. Let me preface this by saying that this is my first rewatch since the show ended, and I only really remembered season 1 clearly. I remember bits and pieces and big arcs, but to this point, is Saeed the best character? Do I remember correctly that things happen down the line that refute this premise? I genuinely can't say, but here's what I will say for now. 1, he is smart and resourceful. 2, he has great arms. 3, he puts up with Locke longer than he should have. 4, he has great hair. 5, he made Shannon likable. 6, he forgives Ana Lucia for killing Shannon. These are just a few. To my first point, he is clearly the smartest and most intuitive character, probably because of his training, but it still works. I also think he grows the most from his backstory. He really reckons the most with who he was in the past. I was really struck by him this episode and thought I'd pose this question. So that's from Julie. Yeah, I guess I'll ask you guys where we are right now, midway through season three. Could we make an argument for Saeed being the best character on Lost? Neil?
Is this what you might call a Saeed protagonist check-in?
Yeah.
I will say I have two thoughts on this. One, especially so far, absolutely, Saeed has shown us a range of emotions that we appreciate. And two, Saeed was always, hopefully this isn't a spoiler, my mom's favorite character all the way through his time on Lost. So, yeah, I guess I would say yes, based on those two points.
Dave?
He's definitely not as frustrating as a lot of other of our other protagonists. I don't know if I could put him above Hurley, because Hurley's such like a presence on the island that manages to like make everybody like him and manage to let the audience like him as well. And Saeed, he's rebounding real strongly from Shannon depressed darkness that sort of like took a while to dissipate. A while in real world time, not on the show where it's been like a couple of weeks and obviously he needed to process that. But I think if all Saeed going forward is like this Saeed and enter 7-7, then yes, he is the season three character who has like, he's able to adapt to things he's not expecting, like Locke actually figuring something out with his compass heading. And he's able to, you know, have a mastery of the situation, like Julie said. So I'm into this version of Saeed for sure.
I love Saeed in this episode, and we'll get to this. But like, I agree. Like, I've said this a million times on this podcast in various iterations. I love a heist, and there's not really a heist in this episode. I guess it's more of like a con/heist or whatever.
It's like an information heist.
But like the fact that Saeed always has like four backup plans and his wheels are always turning and like he's got a really good read on people almost all the time makes him always interesting to watch, because there's always just more going on in his head than he's showing us. And yeah, and I love a Saeed episode. So, and sometimes the backstory can get repetitive. He's in danger of that, the same way, you know, like someone like Charlie is. To a lesser extent, I think this week's backstory, works really, really well.
But they flipped the torturing.
Yeah, if it wasn't for all the torture.
I feel like that's an inside host joke that doesn't translate. Anyway, all right. So Chris emailed, love the podcast, especially the way Joanna brings insider information, Dave provides lore, and Neil knows the technical aspects. What I want to know is, what is the in-universe reason that the flashback characters are speaking English this week? They're in Paris. They all speak Farsi. Why is everyone speaking English? And that's from Chris.
Because the flashback of this episode is actually from the cat's point of view.
Love it. Great. I mean, Neil, I don't think you could top that. I'm sorry. You could try.
No, I don't. I mean, I feel like if you ask the showrunners, they'd probably be like, yeah, remember that time way back in season one where they were speaking Farsi
and then they switched. Wasn't great at it.
That switch was permanent.
Yeah, we're never going back there.
For the entire world.
That was a 13th Warriors moment for our series.
Right. We are not turning that switch back.
There is one line in Farsi in this episode. Okay. And this last email comes from Rolf, who says, I don't know if you're still taking Lost origin stories. I only just discovered the podcast and started listening a few weeks ago around the time of your Not in Portland episode dropped. Thanks again, Mallory Rubin. But since Lost was such a huge part of my 20s, I wanted to share regardless. I first heard of Lost from my brother-in-law, who before season three started was preaching the Lost gospel wherever he could through his season one and season two box sets. I was in my mid-20s. I used to do that, like proselytize via DVD box sets. Okay. I was in my mid-20s and working abroad, but on a visit home, he showed me the pilot and I was immediately hooked. I burned through season one and two in a week or so. I had my folks asked before I had to fly back to work. This is in the early days of iTunes, and since I didn't have TV where I was working, I was doing adult education work in rural Mozambique, but did have pretty good Wi-Fi. I was buying individual episodes for $2 or $3 a piece as they dropped. Can you imagine that? Okay, Lost was also.
Can you imagine? I also totally did that.
Lost is also a pretty huge part of early dating for me and my wife. While I was in Mozambique, we were trading emails, Facebook messages, and early Skype calls, and a good chunk of what we spent our time talking about was Ben's craftiness, Locke's epic zealotry, and Nikki and Paolo's suckiness. When I first heard about this podcast and wanted to join his other pods, I convinced my wife to start a rewatch with me, and it's been a lovely way to revisit both these awesome characters and our own early budding relationship now 15 years later. Y'all are awesome. My only regret is my lack of self-control, because now we're almost all caught up, and I know I won't be able to stop binging and watching the show week to week to follow along. All the best, Rolf, in parentheses, not the Muppet Dog. So, thank you.
Damn it.
Dave was like, finally,
I get to check something from off my bucket list, but no.
Anyway, thank you for that, Rolf, and to Julie and to Chris for your emails. We really appreciate you. You can always email us, host@stormpodcast.com. Neil Miller, what happened on Lost this week?
Actually,
this week's episode of The Storm is brought to you by HelloFresh. What is HelloFresh? HelloFresh allows you to get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking fun, easy, and affordable. Who wants to go to the grocery store right now? Not me. HelloFresh offers you so many recipes to choose from each week to help you break out of your recipe rut. These are fresh, high-quality ingredients every week for a super flavorful experience. My favorite part of the HelloFresh recipes are the seasoning packets. You cannot create these seasonings yourself. HelloFresh has you covered. You can save time and stress effortlessly. HelloFresh offers contactless delivery to your doorstep for easy home cooking with your family. And this is all sustainable. HelloFresh's pre-portioned ingredients means there is less prep for you and less food waste.
That's right. Just today, I made balsamic fig chicken with roasted potatoes and lemony green beans. It came in a nice box with all the parts of it that I could unwrap, wash my vegetables, then immediately recycle everything. It was super easy to make some Yukon potatoes, all roasted, absolutely delicious, just some salt and pepper. And then there's a reduction sauce, which I am famously bad at, but luckily the HelloFresh instructions walk me through it step by step, and I successfully made a balsamic fig reduction sauce for my chicken. It was delicious. It was easy.
Well, now I'm hungry, which means I'm going to go to HelloFresh.com/Storm80 and use the code STORM80 to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, that is HelloFresh.com/Storm80. Use that code STORM80 to get $80 off and free shipping on your first box. It's great.
Neil, what happened on the island this week?
Oh, so much. This episode, Enter 7-7, was directed by our friend and yours, Stephen Williams, and written by two names you've heard of before, Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof. It has a runtime of 44 minutes, and it aired on March 7th, 2007. It takes place on day 79 on the island. In flashbacks, Saeed remembers a time when he was captured and tortured in Paris by a restaurateur and his wife, who herself was a former prisoner of the Iraqi Republican Guard. So the whole situation teaches Saeed a very powerful lesson in forgiveness and some stuff about situational awareness. Back on the island at our beach camp, Sawyer is lonely and just wants his stuff back. So after the gang finds a ping pong table just laying in the jungle, apparently, he challenges everyone else on the beach to a friendly competition, which ultimately leads to Hurley delivering a heaping help of humble pie. And some free therapy for Sawyer, just for good measure. All Sawyer has to do is lay off nicknames for a whole week, which I'm sure will go super well. Out in the jungle, our most capable away team yet, made up of Locke, Kate, Saeed, and Rousseau, are moving to... Maybe.
Negative points for John this week, I think.
they're moving toward the compass, bearing of 305. It is along this journey that we meet Mikhail, or Mikhail, the last living member of the Dharma Initiative. He's also the caretaker of the Flame Station, and He's very handy with a medical kit, which comes in handy after he immediately shoots Saeed in the shoulder. While Saeed and Kate are getting patched up and listening to Mikhail's tale, John Locke plays chess with a computer. There's also a scuffle, and then there's another hatch, and then Miss Clue shows up in time for a big Mystery Island standoff. It all ends with John triumphantly defeating the chess computer, entering 7-7, and blowing up the entire building. The man of faith strikes again. Fun fact. Nadia Comăneci, who is mentioned in this episode, was a famous Romanian gymnast who competed for the USSR, who won 5 gold medals at the Olympics and was the first to score a perfect 10 in Olympic gymnastics. In 1967, she joined a team called The Flame. This week's calm question, just like John Locke, we are going to defeat a computer that cheats at chess and be given several options. And I would like to know which option you would press first if you were John. I'll give them to you again. Enter 2-4 for pallet drop. Enter 3-2 for station uplink. Enter 3-8 for mainland communication. Enter 5-6 for sonar access. And enter 7-7 for hostile incursion. Joanna, which code are you entering into the computer?
Listen, since I don't know anything about adventuring and like what's gonna get us saved, I'm not good at what's gonna get us saved. But what I could maybe do is make our time on this island more comfortable while we are here. So I'm getting that pallet drop, baby, because that I think that means, you know, more Dharma booze for all of us.
Sure. So, some Dharma ranch.
Yeah, pallet drop, ranch and booze.
Brand. All right. Dave, I feel like you're going to be tempted by one of these potentially dangerous options.
Yes, but if I pretend like I'm playing chess against the computer and win and get presented with these options, I think if I look at those things, those titles, my first one would be Station Uplink, because in my mind, I played like way too many Super Nintendo Jurassic Park video games to know that you have to get the uplink working before you could communicate with the mainland.
You're just trying to save your chess game?
Yeah, that first, yeah. First, save the record that I beat the thing of chess.
Yeah, I definitely don't think I would be pressing 7-7 here. Maybe I could be talked into a 5-6 and get some sonar, because tell me more about the sonar. But hostile incursion is just invite, like, yeah, I mean, how does he not know that that isn't going to blow up the thing, which it totally does. So, you know, just, you can't tempt fate like that, John.
Well, I mean, it's, if Saeed would have shared the information that, no, I don't know, John probably still would have done it. Here's the thing about John Locke. He loves finding a hatch with a computer in it and then blowing it up. It's just like his favorite thing in the world.
He will press the scariest number sequence at all times.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not really that mad at John at pressing 77. But I am mad at him for not talking about it with Saeed and Kate first.
Or,
sure.
That's what I wish John had done.
There's the moment where he's standing over an unconscious Mikhail. Very important. Looking down over a hatch. Also very important because his friends are down there. And like, if the hatch closes, who knows if it opens from the inside. Doesn't matter. And then the computer's like, your move. And he's like, oh, man, it's my move.
No, you're right. That's the worst thing. That is, like, that's worse to me than when John Locke gooped Boone Carlyle. This is the worst thing John has done. I'm with you on John antagonist sucks in this episode. I was like, he's not that dumb. He's not that dumb. And yet he is, because he needs to be for the plot machinations or whatever. But, like, John just spending his time playing chess on a computer is ridiculous.
As Neil pointed out before we started recording this, they do manage to get in a nice scene where John's like, you know, humans can lie and that's what makes us great because computers can't cheat. Which is...
Yeah, John apparently trusts the computer, which I believe Mikhail is like, hey, don't trust that computer.
And
John's like,
stranger.
No, I trust computers more than I trust
John's like,
humans.
If I learned one thing last season, it was trust whatever the computer says.
The spooky stranger just like dips by and is like, oh, hey, you're playing my chess computer. No, that will not work out for you. Okay, bye. I'm just going to close this door here. Don't worry. Bye. Like, what the fuck? And John's like, right. Okay.
The only one who is super unnerved by how calm Mikhail is Saeed, and that's because he's totally right to be afraid.
So smart.
And John's just like, ah, never mind. He seems cool. I'll just play this game and see what happens.
Is Saeed, is he our remaining most right Lost Island dweller? Because he seems to
well, Desmond. I mean, he is in this episode. Desmond can see the future now.
Oh, fair.
So he might have some competition, but like, as you pointed out, like he gets duped by Locke. Saeed gets duped by Locke in season one, and then I'm not going to say he's never going to be duped again, but it's pretty hard to dupe him. You know, on a week to week basis.
Yeah,
pretty on top of
this week.
He's growing.
This week we learned he knows horse saddles by sight.
Oh, mm-hmm. Those stirrups are way too short for that tall Russian man.
Yeah. I mean,
also,
there are.
He pays attention to cats, which is important because the cat scratching on the I didn't pick this up until I was like reading more about the episode, but the cat scratching on the ground is like what alerts him to the fact that there's a trapdoor under there. I just thought his like spidey sense was tingling or whatever, but it was the cat. But yeah, but like Naveen Andrews' delivery is like not every nook and cranny. I mean, it's just like, I love Saeed in this episode. I love Mikhail in this episode. And so like, and I love Mikhail just full stop. Big Mikhail fan. So like, I love this episode, even if maybe more than it deserves, but I love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, and there's also like Evangeline Lilly gives some amazing face acting in the scene when Saeed sort of calmly explaining to her what's going wrong. And I think there's some really good stuff in there. There's also some good Evangeline action shots in this one too.
Yeah.
Like when she finally gets one over on Mikhail, she's like into badass Kate guns out, suns out, guns out mode, which is great.
Yeah.
And our Losties have their first, I think, successful like incursion where they're the ones with the guns. Like no one gets accidentally shot. No one takes their guns at the end of this.
Yeah, that's true.
They finally managed to execute.
I mean, no one dies, but like all that no one on our team, quote unquote, dies. But yes, Miss Clue dies, which is too bad because she could probably be more leveraged and she's a human being. And
she's like our remaining black character.
I mean,
they just killed the other one.
Yeah, I mean, like someone said that in our live watch, and it's just like the thing. And maybe this is my own like blinders up or whatever. I just don't think of Miss Clue as even a character, which is a problem maybe in and of itself. But like, she's so barely a character,
right?
It is still the last named black character on the show, and that is for now, and that is not great. But I also just like it's. She does not even strike me as a character. Do you know what I mean? And that's because
she really gets the short shrift here.
They had other plans for her, and then like they switch it up or whatever. And
they're
so
like,
she was
we need someone
like,
to speak who actually speaks what is it, Chinese, so she could translate Jack's tattoo. And let's just make her a judge. Just make up a new character. Was that supposed to be? Was that supposed to be Clue?
The new lady.
No, let me look it up, what the original sort of plan for her was or whatever. But,
I guess while you're doing that, let me ask a question for Neil, who might have, looked through Lostopedia better than I do. Do they have, like, a translation of what Clue is telling Mikhail before she gets shot?
Oh, yes. They absolutely do.
Yes, they
Give me 1 second. I will be happy to tell you.
Yes. This is why it's so good to have a hive mind of people that speak lots of languages that can work on a show for 15 years.
Right.
That was my favorite. That was actually, like, there's that part, which is interesting. But I like the earlier part when Mikhail is talking to his cat and he's like, you know, oh, I told her to be polite or whatever, but really he was like, stop fucking with the rug.
Right.
That's what he says in Russian. Like, leave the floor alone.
Stop playing with the floor, you'll give us away. Okay, so at the end of the standoff, the Russian dialogue between Ms. Clue and Mikhail plays out in such a way where Ms. Clue says, you know what to do. And Mikhail is arguing that they still have another way out. And then she says, we cannot risk it. You know the conditions. And he says, again, there is another way. Then she says, they captured us. We will not let them get into the territory. You know what to do. That's an order. And Mikhail, again, protests, we still have another way. And then that's when she finally, in English, screams, just do it, Mikhail. And that's when he shoots her. So the concern for Miss Clue here is that they are captured, and if they give up the location of the territory, whatever that is, that's worse than death.
Mm. Or at least,
right?
That's-
she's saying, you need to shoot me, because if they get that information out of me, they will get to the territory, and we don't want that.
Got it. But it also, she orders him, so we got,
sure,
we got more weird hierarchy going on.
Yeah, and this is the second time we've seen Miss Clue sort of be in charge. The first time we really weren't sure if we could trust it, because she was like the leader of the camp with
just a door for
a hatch.
Yeah.
So it's like, we don't really know, but like, this is, she, Mikhail actually does follow his order in the end, so she must have some kind of power.
I'm gonna skip, go for it.
I have some information on Miss
Clue. Clues.
Mm-hmm. Which is that she was originally supposed to be the one who Sun kills in Glass Ballerina. But the actress wasn't available, so they made up the entire character of Colleen, which is why the Colleen thing doesn't work. Like, imagine it was Clue, someone who we already, like, at least knew existed. Like, it's not like we care that much about her, but it matters more than, like, mm-hmm. Colleen, who was invented at the last minute to be shot by Sun. So.
Right, and she's really only there to propel Danny's story, right? Like, then it becomes like, right, Danny wants to seek revenge upon, right, Sawyer. Yeah.
And like, he could have been married to Clue, like, you know, Clue could have been his wife. He could have been Danny Clue or whatever. But you know, yeah, we got Colleen instead. And yeah. And so then this sounds like a callous way to say it, but they tied up that loose end by having her die here. But I think mm-hmm. having her be shot by Mikhail just really further underlines, like, her not feeling like an important part of the Lost story. If Sun had killed her, that I think would have conferred a bit more importance on her. Does that mm-hmm. make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because we spent, two or three episodes dealing with the fallout of Sun shooting Colleen. They weren't Sun episodes, but they were episodes dealing with that. So it would have been interesting to at least have some time. I mean, maybe we'll spend some next week. No, I'm not going to lead people along like that. We're not going to spend next week mourning Miss Clue. So it feels like a little blip as we move right along. But at least we got some more information about the hostiles, and they have like a hierarchy, and they have some sort of suicide code, I guess, where their information is important enough. Which definitely, you know, makes me put one good eye on Mikhail's one good eye going forward, because Saeed makes the decision to not kill him, but now we know how far he's willing to go for the cause, and Saeed's got that map. So we assume that the barracks is the territory, or at least that Mikhail's going to have to do something to stop him. Which brings us to something that I'm going to guess Joanna put in the notes, because I've heard her say this before. Best new character intro so far for good old Eye Patch Boy.
I put some respect on his name.
Mikhail.
Well, what are we counting as his intro? This episode? Showing up on a monitor?
Not like looming into frame on a monitor.
Because would kind of rank higher for me.
It's sort of the combination. Like that seed being dropped a couple episodes ago and then this payoff. I really love him in this episode and just in general. But like the lying, the cows, the like cool remote station. He like seems to be typing a novel on his typewriter, which we can get to eventually. He's just lying and then like fighting. He's just great. I just really like him. I don't think it's the best, because I think Desmond has to be better, but like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a pretty good one, I think.
Yeah. I think I would put Desmond and Juliet But this one's maybe a solid number three. It's kind of right in there with like the Taylee. The Taylee's episode is actually really good. Like they are in a, the way they sort of start that episode is great.
The tiger pit. Yeah.
Yeah. But this one's good. Yeah. I just, you know, we've gotten to a point where I don't entirely remember where the McHale story goes, but I remember liking him. I like this guy. He's quite the fascinating screen presence.
He's the first other so far that's been like, why are we playing this charade? Can't we just fight each other?
Right? I mean, can you imagine if this was Ben? It'd be like 3 weeks of sitting in that cabin trying to figure out who Henry like, Gale was.
He'd be like, let me read my novel to you.
Yeah, exactly. No.
All cows also named Nadia.
Mikhail does a beautiful job sewing Saeed up, and then like just a couple minutes later, punches him right in the bullet wound.
Yeah, that's some... really specific karate moves. Like he gets up like he's like Ivan Drago, and
I love him. That's the like beauty of Mikhail is like he'll patch you up and then he'll punch you right in the fucking bullet right. wound. Yeah. Love it.
He's aware of all your weaknesses.
Yeah.
So we have lots of stuff going on at the new Flame Station, but we also have a very enjoyable little B plot going on down on the beach that Neil mentioned, as Sawyer pretty much picks up immediately off his scene at the end of last episode, still feeling sad about Kate. But so if Sawyer's good at one thing, he's good at manifesting ways to make the entire beach hate him at once. So he, you know, first of all, asks for his stuff back, which seems like a weird, like instance specific take on Finders Keepers, but whatever. And then challenges to a ping pong competition, the best of the beach goers, and which ends up being Hurley, kind of unsurprisingly. But we get a ping pong showdown that is a nice little break in the tension from what's happening up at the Flame Station and the flashback, which we'll loop back to. But I want to talk about ping pong. Hurley's having a good run for feeling good. He starts this episode feeling good, and he ends this episode strong. Neil, give me your theory about how badly Hurley actually beats Sawyer, since we don't actually get to see it.
Oh, man. I mean, he beats him, obviously, 11, or I guess 14 to 3, because the mercy rule is once you're up by 11. So pretty badly. I guess what I love about this is it's such a simple, you know, we just got done with a really great full Hurley episode, but this sort of shows you the brilliance of the character in that he gets so little screen time in this. And just like Saeed is having an extreme moment of competence. Hurley is having that not just as a ping pong player, but also as the person who is empathetic and notices thing and has basically become the de facto therapist for our other characters at the camp. And I love the moment at the end that they have where it's like Hurley's trying to prove to Sawyer, obviously he's trying to prove, like, don't be a dick, but also this idea that, like, Sawyer may act like he doesn't care about people, but Hurley knows that he probably does, and Hurley cares so much that he notices very little subtle things. You know, like when he says, like, Kate's going to be fine, like, that's just an amazing Hurley moment, and it all comes after he you know, serves Sawyer some humble pie, which he absolutely deserves all the time. So I love it. And yeah, I guess whatever that last shot was very, very, embarrassing for James Ford.
Yeah. I does not seem in a good mood when we cut back to him fixing his glasses.
Broke his glasses.
Gotta be an intense shot. Joanna, yep. It seems like the characters heard us and put up the proper stakes to this ping pong games, which is no more nicknames from Sawyer. After last week when we were like, man, you're enjoyable and everyone wants to have a jungle beer with you, but teaching Jin bad English and again with the goddamn nicknames. We got it. We won. We beat him, right?
For a week. Not long enough.
Do we wanna count this? We're on day what, 79?
Day 79.
I thought it was 77.
Oh no, 77 is at this. This episode takes place on day 79. The fun fact about 77 is that it's like the day they started on their way to the flame station.
Oh right, because it took them 2 days to get there. Right. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, yes, we're on day 79.
All right,
yes.
So we're going to try to see if we get to what, day 86?
80.
With no nicknames?
No nicknames.
Yeah.
All right, let's introduce No Nickname Corner. Yeah. I just want to shout out Jorge Garcia's incredible portrayal of Hurley trying to be a ping pong bull shark.
Right.
Like...
His inability to be cool about it.
He's just trying to be like really like you wanna play a mercy? He's like not making eye contact. He's just like, you know, it's no big deal, man. I'm not about to like wipe the
Do we know?
Anything.
And I know this is like a tarp level question, but do we know where this ping pong table actually came from? Wasn't it in the hatch?
The hatch. Well, that's they said that in the episode. Like it got blown into the jungle.
There's so many questions about. What actually happened with the hatch? How did a ping pong table survive, but Desmond's clothes didn't?
The audience wants what the audience wants. It's just the like flat table itself, because they had to like put new legs on it and like come up with like a net and stuff like that. I don't know what the ball is a ball to.
So far, it seems to be games and sporting props that have survived the explosion. They got
Rikes,
ball,
the bicycle.
Bicycle, the dart that Sawyer stepped on, the ping pong table. So if it was used for like entertainment in the hatch, it seems like it survived. Oh.
The message
Keep
of
an
the
eye
hatch
out for the
explosion.
Lava lamp.
Yeah, come on.
The message of the hatch explosion from the island was y'all need to chill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get away from the hatch, play games.
So I have a quick question. Hurley has discovered a golf, made a golf cart course, created a ping pong like tournament. If you had to like had your choice, what game or recreation would Hurley devise next for the beach camp?
I mean, they're one more van away from a racetrack.
Ooh, that's a big step. I was trying to think like so I think like you could like gin up some like a pretty good game of croquet somewhere around the island.
I was thinking croquet is a little tough though because you need like a clearing. You can't play it on the sand, and you need like a clearing in the jungle in order to do it, right?
What about that game that I play with hippies in Boulder all the time? We in bars.
Cornhole?
No, not that one. That's like bros. The hippies want to play that one with, it's like, there's a tiny ball and you throw the bigger balls in the sand and you try to get as close to the tiny
bocce?
Ball.
Bocce. Oh, bocce
there
ball.
We go.
Bocce ball.
Yeah.
Some bocce.
Yeah,
some coconut bocce.
All you need is some balls. Or maybe
I would love to play coconut bocce. That's so funny that hippies want to play, because out here hippies play cornhole.
Yeah. And, cornhole's like a house party thing here.
Bocce is for like bocce is in the same realm as croquet. It's like for snooty people.
Oh, sorry, I should have specified Boulder hippies if I didn't, because that is like
okay.
Those people snooty, are the people who are people. Making the most greenhouse gas in the state of Colorado because of their gigantic houses.
Got it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely bougie, but something that could be done with like a lemon and some coconuts.
Bocce, yeah, coconut and lemon bocce sounds like a really fun time to me. I love bocce ball.
No open water swimming races. We've already lost too many people to swimming.
Yeah, too many Joannas have died to let us know. I'm trying to think. Actually, there is one. I forgot that there is one that comes to mind that they actually do play in future, so I won't say that one. But I am surprised that they, I guess I'm just surprised that they haven't like rigged up a cornhole game yet. It feels like a natural fit, for what's going on the island. Anyway.
Or like a baseball game. Why haven't they put together a stick and ball baseball situation yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like rather than Paolo sort of like chipping balls into the water, they should be like, playing a game.
Yeah.
Catch. Love it. Love to see it.
All right. I want to loop back to cats, specifically flashback cat, who is we've separated it from Saeed's story, because as we discussed earlier before we started our segment, this episode's flashback is actually from the point of view of the cat. I like this episode's flashback, even though I don't like cats, and I feel like it's much more of a mood piece when the episode could have been a much more compare and contrast to what was going on at the Flame Station when Neil said in his recap of the calm, lessons in situational awareness, that was the first time it dawned on me that they were even that closely related. I think it was just about like the mindset of Saeed, who's like sort of dealt with, he went from dealing with his torturing guilt to now he has like Shannon guilt. And here he is where he keeps getting put in these situations where he either has to torture or be tortured, and just sort of like the weight of that. And then our lead woman who manages to find a way through with that tale of the cat, who it's just like some, you know, some wounds become scars and never heal, and that's part of the whole deal. Really sort of worked better as a mood piece than like a straight up, I guess, kind of a moral piece for me this week. Joanna, did I completely misread it?
No, I completely agree. I was reading an old recap this week of the episode, and someone on the AV Club wrote this line that I really liked, which was that given the nature of the Saeed flashbacks, you know, like versus a Charlie flashback versus a Jack flashback versus a whatever, Saeed flashbacks, like Charlie flashbacks, are a little repetitive, but given their need, like I think it can be frustrating, and we've had people push back on that who like really like the repetitive nature, the backslide nature of the Charlie flashbacks. But it can be frustrating as an audience to watch that versus a Saeed flashback, even though we're watching circling the same drain over and over again, which is like the torture drain or whatever, right? This idea, it's so emotionally scarring and jarring to watch someone that we think as very morally correct do something so terrible, or deal with the fallout of doing something so terrible. And then, so this is the line in the AV Club write-up that I really like. This makes it really difficult for a Saeed episode to feel entirely new, but it also makes it very easy for a Saeed episode to resonate. And I really agree with that sentiment, especially in this last exchange between this woman, Amira, and Saeed. I think it's an incredible scene, incredible work from Naveed Andrews, and incredible work from this guest actress, Anne Bedian, I think is how you pronounce her name. I think she's so good, and I think he's great, and I could watch them talk about their wounds, emotional and physical, for a really long time. And so the connectivity is the cat, right? Connectivity. And then also like Saeed allowing Mikhail to live feels like it's connected, but the emotional connectivity works really, really well for me.
Yeah, I think they're also trying to tie it, and this is why I mentioned situational awareness, because at the end, the conversation that Mikhail and Saeed are having is like basically like Mikhail's telling him like sleep with one eye open, and Saeed is remembering this moment where he learned that lesson in a way that Mikhail can never understand from this woman. So Saeed, like the cat, knows what it's like to live scared. He knows what it's like to be skeptical in this situation. So he's not scared of Mikhail here. And I think that probably should scare Mikhail. You know, like, I feel like there's an element of this where it's like the lesson she wanted to leave him with at the end is how scared it can be when you don't feel safe. And Mikhail's trying to pull that on Saeed at the end of this episode. And he's just like, no, man, I've been through some shit. Like, you know, it's similar to like Sawyer not knowing that Hurley is good at table tennis or ping pong because he never thought to even ask, you know?
I think, I don't know, if I were to like try to boil that down, then it would be like, like everyone's the cat, and Saeed, sure. Saeed realizes like both the sad,
Saeed
the
knows how to be
and,
the cat,
the sadness and the reality in this situation. Of that, which is yeah. like you can be safe, but you're never gonna feel safe, and that means that you have to just like live in that scar. Yeah.
Saeed has been, he's been the cat, he's been the kids. You know, in the story. So there's not, I don't think there's anything that Mikhail can threaten him with on the island that's going to make him deviate from the plan that now exists in his head.
Yeah.
But also, to quote Hamilton, forgiveness.
Sure. Like, you know? Yeah. And it's great because it's both, because that whole sequence between the conversation that he has with this woman is like, it's all about forgiveness, and it's all about like empathy and, you know, having empathy for someone who's done terrible things to you. And I think it really is sort of an underrated flashback. And some of the Saeed ones get, I guess that's sort of the point of that whole quote from the AV Club, which is spot on, because it's like, you know, they sneak up on you and they're really good like emotionally.
I think Naveen is just so, I think he's tremendously good, and I think you know, we'll get to this, you know, probably more in the future, but I think the show could have done a lot more with
sure.
this a character this compelling and a performer this good.
Yeah.
You know? The reason why we keep getting the questions of like, you know, why we keep asking like, is Saeed the best character? It's because Naveen Andrews is really good, and they could have used him a lot more, and it would have, you know, made the show better in certain spots.
That's true. Mm-hmm. But like, even because Joanna's right in that, or Joanna/AV Club, the hybrid mind is correct that like these are difficult, like Charlie storylines, but where we've like in our rewatch been able to find some cool Charlie stuff, I think by really like digging at the idea of like how addiction drags on a person, and even though we may not like it dramatically, that's like something with it. It's kind of amazing that Saeed also has the same subject matter, but it reads like a layered onion instead of, I don't know, a drug potato.
A drug potato.
A drug turnip.
All right, before we do some corners, Joanna wants to talk about how Rousseau has survived on the island so long.
Yeah, I want to mention a couple things. Number one, I do want to mention, I saw some quote where Damon was saying something about like the worst possible mystery box end game for Lost would be a literal box, and out of that box would walk Jack's dad, Kate's horse, and Saeed's little cat. He said Saeed's little cat, which is just like a really cute little phrase. So I think we need to put Nadia, the cat, in the Kate horse category. I mean, they later cat? Said that they later said horse? That Nadia was just a cat, but that's why I have cat ! Written down here, because cat.
I mean, I also just finished watching What We Do in the Shadows, where there are two Nadias and one of them is a doll.
Yeah.
So I can buy it.
I love that show. And then we should mention really quickly, and we might talk about it a little bit more in the storm, but that Mikhail's full name is Mikhail Bakunin, and that is, I might be butchering that last name, but that is the full name of a Russian philosopher who is considered the father of anarchy. And I think it's interesting, usually when they do their little like nods to philosophers, they don't use the full name, but they did in Mikhail's case, which I think is interesting. But yeah.
He's a collectivist anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of like a socialist libertarian.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting to like tie that to sort of like what was happening on the beach in terms of like, we share things now, stuff is important to you. Like the idea of economics and sociology and what was happening in the beach. And then we meet a character named Mikhail Bakunin. So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Sawyer is sort of rampant individualism, you know, where he's just like, it's always about Sawyer. It's always about Sawyer's stuff. Whereas everybody else is sort of figuring out like, oh, if we just sort of work together and help each other, we'll get through this. It's crazy.
Paolo's like, if I just take your magazine to the shitter with me, everything's fine, right?
Paolo's like,
right?
Man, you got so much porn. Can we just have some of it to pass around?
Some of it for the bathroom? Okay.
Right.
And then, speaking of characters named after philosophers, our beloved Danielle Rousseau, I feel like I had this conversation with you guys after we stopped recording last week, or maybe it was in the storm, but I just love the moment in this episode where she's like, oh, you guys are going to fuck with that? Here's Rousseau's rules are, I do not fuck with that. You see that over there? I don't want it. I don't want
anyone
to smell
your
camps. Like trouble. No, that's a no for
buildings.
Me.
Unless I'm there to steal a baby, which I don't think there are any babies here.
In the flame station, I don't see one. So that's right. A no for me. I'm not taking no cats. I'm not taking no cows. I'm not taking an eye patch. I'm Rousseau. I'm staying out here safe. Thank you.
I'll be by the stream for when you find a baby or when you're done. Whichever comes
first. She's like, if you survive, you dumb fucks.
Do you think she was doing? I mean, they were in there for what? Probably a couple hours?
Send some traps.
Yeah, just chilling.
We should always just assume that Rousseau in her downtime is setting up traps somewhere. She's like, yeah. I've got some rope and some time. I can make a trap. So, yeah. So I think that's all the things that I wanted to talk about. I love that about Rousseau, that she's like, I'm not messing with that at all. No, thank you. Oh, one more thing before we leave the comm. Dave, you might remember that back when someone was communicating with Michael claiming to be Walt, mm-hmm. You put forward this theory that maybe Walt was inside the computer. Mm-hmm. In the storm, my frequent retort to that was like, please don't be ridiculous. It was obviously Mikhail. I can finally say that in the calm. Please don't be ridiculous. It was obviously Mikhail posing as Walt. Do you have an answer to that?
I don't think you have an answer to that, is my answer.
I mean, I will say this, that supports Joanna's claim. Not that I necessarily agree. But with Miss Clue there and her being the one who had Walt, that does tie it a little more close. That would be evidence for it being Mikhail. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, I still believe in Walt's
Electro Walt.
Yeah, we have
telepathic magnetic abilities.
We never figured out what made Walt so special. For all we know, right? It's Electro Walt. But yeah, actually, if I'm going to have to take an L on this one, I'm going with Neil's L and saying that Mikhail runs the flame station, but Clue is a much better orchestrator of Walt's.
So it was Miss Clue.
Just sad and petty.
It was Miss Clue in the flame station on Mikhail's computer.
Exactly.
Did she have to beat the chess game first?
Ridiculous.
Maybe.
And apparently those are two, like, the two chess games that we see him play are, like, based on two real famous chess matches. So they're, like, super hard. So the idea that, like, John beats it is, you know, John.
Yeah, but also he, like, apparently, according to Lossopedia, that wasn't actually checkmate at the end there. So I was like, the computer does cheat.
Maybe, like, it's not me you should teach chess. You should jump in a time machine and teach the Lost Writers Room how to do chess.
pick an easier game. Tic-tac, tic-tac-toe. Just, you know, well, more games had it right.
Obviously, it's hard for a security measure, but that's super annoying if you're, like, just trying to coerce Michael into traversing the entire island to come get his son.
And you have to, like, beat the chess game.
Or if you were a Dharma person, like, there's a hostile incursion. Oh, God, gotta play chess faster.
Oh, queen takes knight 7. If you're listening, please do email us, hostthestormpodcast.com, if you think Dave Gonzalez is being unnecessarily petty by conceding the L to Neil instead of me.
Very, very well. With that throwing down of a gauntlet, Neil, do we have a Giacchino corner this week? We don't. Well, it's our Jungle of Mystery moment.
This one, I mean, there's a lot of mystery because this one, in addition to blowing up the flame station, is also, there's like exposition bombs everywhere. But it's really when Mikhail talks about the purge, because immediately my brain is like, wait, the what? When was that? What happened? Who got purged? So I'm looking forward to finding out more.
about the Purge.
Yeah, some sort of weird war between scientists and hostiles. Gonna have to figure that one out. Our Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award. This one I'm gonna give more props to Neil for, because yes, Sawyer got hit in the face with a ping pong ball for that game point and fell down. Sawyer fell down and broke his glasses.
Plenty of falling down in this episode, but Sawyer's off-camera fall that knocked off and broke his glasses and was only perpetrated by Hurley's quickness and a ping pong ball is got to be the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to that guy. It was so bad they didn't even show it on the show.
they shot it and they're like, this is just too sad. Oh man, Joanna, guess what's coming back this week? It's Accent Corner.
All right, we're going to Accent Corner with two accents we will probably not have to deal with again, and one of my favorite Lost accents of all time. So, first we have Ambedian, who plays Amira, who is ostensibly Iraqi. Where do we think this actress is from, Neil? What do you think?
I don't know if I've seen her in anything else. I'm going to guess no, because I don't know if there are a ton of, like, so the question is she Iraqi in real life? I don't think that's true.
Her full name, I should say, is, Anne, Nahabedian, if that makes any difference to you.
I mean, it really could go either way.
Mm-hmm. Dave?
I'm going to say she's ethnically Persian, but that could put her in like Turkey or Iran or Iraq, but I'm going to say that from face.
She is a Canadian-born Armenian.
Oh.
Yes. Oh.
Go Armenians.
All right. So that is one.
Except for the drummer of System of a Down, which we recently learned is a Trump supporter. He'd go fuck himself.
The other is Sean Taub, who is an actor a lot of us recognize from his work in Iron Man, for example. You know, this is a guy we've seen before who plays Amira's husband, Sammy. Is this actor Iraqi? Let's start with Dave.
Oh shit, I should know this, but I'm gonna say no.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I should know this one too. I'm gonna also say no. Because I'm going to say no.
He is Iranian.
So. Hey.
Oh, okay. This is next door.
Next door.
Yeah, I'm sure both those countries appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm sure they agree.
Lastly, we've got my favorite and yours, Andrew Dibhoff, a.k.a. Mikhail. Neil Miller.
Is he really? I mean, the way he speaks about Nadia Comaneci
with such passion. Such
also, the last name. I'm going to say that he, right? That's kind of Russian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Eastern European.
Yeah, it's spelled D-I-V-O-F-F, like as professionally, but also D-I-V-O-V. So
okay. Yeah, I'm going to go with he's either Russian or he's from a country that used to exist in the USSR, which could be like Romania or, you know, all the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try to make it simple and say Russian. Yeah, why not? He's Russian.
Okay. So Andrew Dibhoff is of Russian extraction, but his dad's Russian. But he's actually from Venezuela.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
And he speaks 9 languages. Which is as many as Viggo Mortensen. I know Andrew Dibhoff before I knew him on Lost. I know Andrew Dibhoff from the tremendous horror franchise Wishmaster, where he plays the titular Wishmaster. Have you guys ever seen Wishmaster?
I feel like we've talked about, did we talk about this on a podcast?
I think we talked about it on Storm Chasing, maybe. But
yeah.
It was my Storm Chasing.
I do remember somebody telling me about Wishmaster, but I don't think I've seen anything beyond YouTube clips of Wishmaster.
Did I not send you guys images of him in makeup?
You probably did.
Okay, it's amazing. Yeah, anyway, Google, go ahead and Google Andrew Dimoff in Wishmaster. He looks great with, like, in his human form without the eye patch. He looks great with the eye patch, let's be clear. Looks great in makeup, just great all around. Big Andrew Dimoff fan.
Looks great when he's punching Saeed in the womb that he just sewed up.
When he's, like, apologizing for the bitterness of his homegrown iced tea. What a man.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. That's Accent Corner. You guys did okay.
Hey. Great. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, goes to Mikhail, who says, "My name is Mikhail Bakunin, and I am the last living member of the Dharma Initiative." No, you ain't. Didn't even take one whole episode to figure out that was a lie.
I mean, yeah. That one's pretty exposed pretty quickly.
Joanna, back to Joanna for our Jungle of Kistery. Remind us how we did last week.
All right, so Jungle of Kistery is a segment where we pick two people, or usually our listeners pick a person and an inanimate object, seems to be a trend, that either did kiss or should be kissing. We run a poll every week on our Twitter account, at Storm Podcast, where you know, you can vote on which couple or maybe even thruple that you feel should be doing some smooching. So last week, coming in dead last, it's Vincent and Roger's arm. That's a real shame because I like
tough
that
tough break
one.
For Roger.
Second to last, 15% of the vote, Hugo's hand, Charlie's face. Slap. 21% of the vote, Trisha Tanaka and the meteor.
That was definitely the most forceful kiss.
Kiss of death.
Yeah.
But in number one, running away with the poll this week, it is Sawyer and the warm jungle beer for 52% of the vote. So there you go.
It's Sawyer's pretty sensual. Josh Holloway in that beer can.
This week, from our listeners, this is, you know, a product we watch episodes of Lost every week with our Patreon subscribers. You can join the Patreon, hop into our Slack, and watch with us every Saturday. We watch the new episode, and when we're watching, our listeners come up with these Kistery nominations. So we've got Adam has suggested John and the chess computer.
Your move.
Melissa suggested Saeed and being on top of shit. That's great stuff. Saeed and extreme capability. Beth has suggested Mikhail and his cat, Nadia. And then Kalmagoo, that's her username. That's the best I could do. Came up with Saeed's arms and Kate's arms.
Ooh,
for Kistery.
Gun show.
The double gun show.
We just want them to reenact that still frame from Predator where they shake hands really hard. It's just like Saeed and Kate and my mission.
I love it. Like, cause you know, Saeed's wearing his usual tank top, right? So you can like, the full gun show is on display. But I feel like Evangeline Lilly, and or Kate, like pushed up the sleeves of her t-shirt.
Right.
So she can be like, what? No, I mean, I have them too. Just don't.
I am also.
Her sleeves are pushed.
This is also like, this is her away squad. She's sort of the leader of, I mean, even though Saeed sort of takes point on unraveling the mystery of Mikhail, this is still Kate's show. And I think she wanted to show some dominance here with these other equally capable humans.
Love this for her.
All right. I'm going to guess it's the arms, but if you want to follow us up at Storm Podcast, we'll have that vote up and we'll see who wins. Book club. I'm going to keep throwing Joanna because you've got this one. Mikhail's apparently writing a novel.
That's the theory. If you go onto Lostpedia, I don't think it's a spoiler to explore this particular. I mean, first of all, the cats in this episode have their own little like page on Lostpedia, which is great. But Mikhail's document has a you know, like you can just imagine because John's rifling through some pages that he's found on a typewriter, and you can just imagine the fans of the time have definitely freeze framed this and then gone onto the message boards and being like, who speaks Russian? Who can translate this for us? Because the document's in Russian with some notes in the margin, and they're like, what is Mikhail working on? So like, this, it's all there translated on Lostpedia if you want to read it, but it has to do with like the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and, someone named Andre, and there's like a dialogue, the Pakistanis arrived today and stuff like that. So people have guessed that Mikhail is writing like either a memoir or like a thriller novel based on his time in the Soviet Army. So that is
And editing himself.
Yeah. So one of the notes says, my name is also Andre. And then the other note says, I've forgotten so much about Afghanistan. So, you know, there's, you know, it's like from his memories. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. Wish we could read Mikhail's novel.
Back during the Cold War.
Back during the Cold War. Where's Libby? You know Libby. She left too soon, and we like to find her in flashbacks because she has a habit of peeking in other people's flashbacks. This week, we've decided she's the hostess at La Jardin Croissant Fertile. Whatever. The restaurant.
Is that the restaurant where Saeed works, or the one where Shantab...
The one where Shantav works.
What does that translate to?
Le Jardin Croissant Fertile means the Fertile Crescent, the Garden of the Fertile Crescent. So, and yeah, I decided that Libby was the hostess, and she's probably aware of the shit going on in the kitchen in the back. But
she's
yeah, Libby.
She's named the
Libby
cat.
Libby can keep a secret.
that cat is firework cat is definitely named Dave for sure.
The official podcast check-in usually goes here, but as of this point with the official Lost podcast that was airing in between episodes of Lost, Damon and Carlton are still taking some time off. It is a Michael Emerson interview, which is interesting because Ben is not in this episode. But if you want to check that out, you know, there's transcripts, the MP3 is still up, and I will let you know when Damon Carlton come back to answer questions, which I believe is in 2 weeks. So with that, we are going to step into the storm right after this.
Now is the time on the podcast where we love to thank our subscribers at the $10 level or above. They get to watch movies with us. They get to get all our like mailbag episodes, all of our bonus episodes, and they're just great folks. So we want to thank Matthew Keane, Karen Frost Arnold, Blake Bell, Ali Oman, Brad Mashenko, Vanessa Marshall, Corey Hilsey, Kelly Grady, Fanny Martin, Patrick Sullivan, Zachary Silverman, Grace Richardson, Joshua Lane, Bethany Townsend, Danielle, Justin Young, Harrison Fox, Dr. John Stahl, and Aaron Miller. Thank you all so much.
And I would like to add to that, thank you to Heather Ogden, Tasia Pender, Danielle Boltema, Adam Wells, Luis Collins, Michael Filippini, Natalie Muskin Press, Tommy Fitzgerald, Michael Belitsky, Paul Tyrell, and we are so excited because it used to be a Game of Thrones podcast. That's how we're going to pronounce your last name until you correct us, Paul. Dre, Christopher McGreen, Sean Stringfield, Warpstone, Derek Bachman, PP, Clark Ainsley, Emilio Diaz, Cameron Fredrickson, and Danichi Portnoy. Thank you very much.
I would like to thank the following humans. Melissa Horsfall, Mariana Cotto, Nate, Robbie Rapass, Jose Cordova, Emily Relf, Amy Gomez, Maggie Craddock, Laurel White, Chris Miracle, Brandy Mandato, Cameron Fowler, Julie Sorrells, Delane Mitchell, Amy Calhoun, Mark Tozer, Christina Sullivan, Jamie Britz, Saquon Gatling, and Joe Jenka. Thank you all very much.
And we are back in the storm for a Locke antagonist check-in where he blew up a station because he wanted to beat a computer at chess. And he didn't really beat the computer at chess, but he still blew up the station.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. If this episode is from the perspective of the flame station, Locke is an extreme antagonist in this episode. Blows that shit up.
So, like, I get that we leave with the map. Okay, that's what we need. You know, we leave with a prisoner. Okay.
And the knowledge of cabling.
Yeah, knowledge of cabling. First of all, he murdered all those cows. Like, we never see those cows again, so Locke...
I think it's confirmed later that the horse survived.
The horse survived, but not the cows. Yeah.
The horse and the cat survive.
Horse and the cat.
Well, of course the cat survived as a ghost cat.
Sure.
But that being
spirit
said,
spirit of Nadia,
we lost all the remaining Dharma instructional binders, as far as we know.
There were so many binders.
So much information.
So much information.
And Saeed took one page.
This is the station? This is the one where you communicate to and from? The land, the mainland where we're trying to get? Cool, let's blow it up.
I mean, it felt like, okay, so like, first of all, I agree with you, okay? If you want to pick an antagonist this episode, it's Lost, is Locke and his stupidity. It's not Mikhail, it's Locke. So I agree with you. I'm not fighting you on this at all. I do want to parse quickly the language, Locke blew up the flame station. That makes it sound like he knew punching 77 in there was going to blow it up.
That's
true.
Say
he accidentally, through his own stupidity, blew up the
flame station. I mean, he also did kind of man of faith it, though, where it was like, he keeps just pushing buttons on the computer, not entirely thinking it through. And I feel like he should have learned his lesson by now.
I think I agree with that.
He should have hit pallet drop, is what we're saying.
I mean, just do what Joanna would do and get you some more booze. Do we think that this is a little bit of a, like, not a middle finger, but like, and not even a little bit, I would say a large tease to the audience that is just looking for clues. Not only did they kill the character named Clue in this episode, but they were like, surely the Lost audience watching this episode, the proto Redditors were like, look at all those binders. We're about to find out so much. And then Carlton and Damon are like, bow. Fuck you. No.
I mean, I don't think it's a middle finger at clues. I think it's very specifically a middle finger at the Dharma Initiative, where they're like, okay, you guys liked it, but it was really for like this, you know, the part that you guys focused on was actually for our mobisodes in between seasons 2 and 3. And we're in season 3 now. So if you guys could get on board with these hostiles, that'd be really great.
Yeah. The explanation of the Dharma Initiative and like that became the obsession for fans. And I'm not entirely sure that was ever the obsession for Damon and Carlton. Like they use it in a lot of interesting ways, but you know, as we speed toward the end game, it's really more about the characters, man.
Yeah. And they're not going to answer any of the questions. Like, what was the Dharma Initiative's point? Like, they're not.
But they do. I mean, we get some important stuff. I mean, I don't want to walk away from this episode being like, we didn't get anything useful we get the sonar, the thing about where Saeed even recognizes, oh, there's a cable going into the sea, which that's going to be like really important, very soon. And we do get some details, you know, the purge, I guess would be the other big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to read this other quote from, a Slate review that was written at the time. So like without any foreknowledge. This person wrote, last night's episode, Enter 77, was one of the show's patented, densely plotted hours where ultimately very little is revealed, though the flurry of information thrown at the viewer could easily be mistaken for something substantive. And like, I don't hate that take for a take at the time, especially when we watch all that Dharma info get blown up. But I do think there's a lot we take away with us from this episode. I don't always remember the Saeed flashback, though I'm going to try to in the future because I think it is a very emotionally good one. But I do always remember this episode. The flame station introduction, the Mikhail introduction. Mikhail's not like a fully fleshed character, but he is like very instrumental in the finale of the season. Like, you know, there is a lot. I think there is a lot we do learn sneakily in this episode.
Well, I think, you know, we talked a couple of, last episode, which was the Hurley one? No, two episodes ago. About it being maybe a filler episode. This is another flavor of Lost episode where I like to call it's like the spaghetti against the wall kind of mystery episode where they just take a whole bunch of plot points and throw them against the wall and only a couple of them really stick, but there was a lot of spaghetti that ran down the wall that we, you know, paid attention to for a second there and what did not matter. That's also kind of part of the fun of Lost is eventually they realized how closely everyone was reading their show. And they were like, oh my God, they're paying even more attention sometimes than we are. Although that's still kind of hard to believe because an entire room just was paid to sit there and think about Lost all the time to write it. But they started responding to it. And I think for a while here, it works really well. You know, I think it's only at the end where you get into that territory of like, are they explaining too much, or is there too much mystery and not enough answers? At this point in season three, we are really on the upswing of the roller coaster and it feels great. And, I guess it was probably more frustrating at the time, but knowing where it goes now, it's great.
Do we ever get a for sure answer that it was Mikhail's glass eye in the aerostation? Or is that just something I've assumed into canon over years?
Well, I don't know.
Because we don't, we don't ever flash back to earlier Mikhail when we're time jumping.
Let's see, does Mikhail's eye have its own
stuff? Yeah. Unfortunately, when you type in glass on the Mikhail page, it just gives you looking glass over and over again. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the flash sideways. Yes, yes, yes.
Maybe is it like through aerostation? Because it would just be one of the things that was in the, one of the only things in the aerostation.
This is great podcast.
Mikhail's already been there and cleaned out the computers so John Locke couldn't blow it up.
I mean, I guess it could be his eye, but I don't think it ever, like, is directly addressed. Yeah,
I think that might just be headcanon because it's like we don't run across another one-eyed person that really stuck in my memory.
The glass eye does indeed have his own stuff on Lostpedia. And it says, the only person on the island known to have lost an eye was Mikhail Bakunin. However, it was later revealed that Mikhail's right eye was completely scarred over, which presumably precluded him from having use for a glass eye.
Damn it.
So there's another guy running around who's got an eye patch who's just empty socket. Which is
or just like another guy running
probably
around with
very
a,
gross
like
in the jungle.
Guess what, guys? I found Libby. She is the stub photograph on the Glass Eye page on Lostpedia. It's Libby holding the glass eye. Always good to see you, Libs. can I tell you a fun fact I learned about this episode while doing some research?
Yes.
Damon and Carlton sent out a letter with the screeners for this week's episode. That says, for those of you who want beach stories, you'll be disappointed until next week. For those of you who want answers, you'll be happy until next week.
So. Yeah, this is when they were having fun.
They were having fun, but the recaps that I read, because one of you had, it was in the comm, but, I don't know if we want to talk about it here, the ratings page.
Oh yeah,
Lost Wiki.
That is a fascinating thing when you look at like the graph in season three, because it's really starts to go
off a cliff,
down.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Basically,
yeah,
after those first few bad episodes,
the Slate recap I was reading was talking a lot about fandom, like unrest in the fandom. People feeling like, frustrated and disappointed and stuff like that. So like, I just think that it's, you know, I think Damon, who has always been so sensitive to how people are responding to what he's doing, I think if he was aware of some of that feedback, like that would explain why a letter went out where it's like, if you're unhappy now, don't worry, you'll be happy next week. And if you're unhappy next week, don't worry, you'll be happy the week after that. You know what I mean? Like that strikes me as very Damon anxiety for a fandom that's like, you know, having some issues, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, it really was. I mean, this was airing in 2007. So this was the very beginning, not necessarily of the internet, but of sort of the internet culture that we know now as like, you know, in social media and internet detectives and internet sleuths. That really didn't exist a ton before this, and Lost really kickstarted a lot of that. Like people were way deep on Lost, and yeah, but it was an interesting thing for them to deal with, you know, being so new.
This review says, I suppose this is what people have been clamoring for. A great many Lost fans weren't as charmed by Hurley's adventure with the Little Miss Sunshine bus as I was. Furthermore, despite spending most of the season with the others, we still don't have any real sense of how they fit into the greater scheme of the island or what the Dharma Initiative is all about, or do some concrete answers already. Of course, this being Lost, the concrete answers we do get will likely contradict previous answers and lead to more questions. Some shows are aided by post-viewing discussions and clarifications. This one requires a flowchart. So, yeah, I think we're in the midst of people being like, what are the answers? What are the answers? What's happening? What are the answers I need to know? And that's the conflict that we've talked about that was happening behind the scenes, where Damon and Carlton were telling the network, we want to end this show, you know, knowing where you're going to end it. I mean, it's crazy to think about that in the midst of season three with so many seasons left after, but it is like it's a quicker run to the end from here than the first couple seasons where they're establishing mystery. And so I think them lobbying for that endpoint has a lot to do with them also wanting to be able to start answering questions rather than just posing new mystery after new mystery after new mystery, you know?
Yeah. And I guess it also really does sort of inform why Damon and Carlton's response will be like, we'll just wait for it, because in their minds, the rest of season three had already existed, you know? It's just the audience that hadn't seen it yet. So that's kind of and like now we get to look at it like that. Like we know where it's going, at least in season three. So like we know it gets a ton better than where they've been. He's the only one who knew that at the time, you know? Well, and the other people who made it.
Season three, episode seven is Stranger in a Strange Land, right?
I believe seven is not in Portland. So it was the break. Oh. So they had 17 million.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, like, sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
Yeah. So they, well, and so the season two, if we're still looking at the ratings, was in the like 18 to 20 million range. And it started to like fall off there toward the end down into like 16, 15. And then, yeah, it's like right after that episode six, where they were at like 17 million viewers, they dropped below 15. And I don't think they ever got back above it, even all the way to the end.
Yeah, not even the finale. Yeah, like I was thinking, it's the break, but it's also, but there's also a big drop between 7 and 8.
Yeah.
It goes from like just under 15 to just under 13. So I'm wondering if like, so there's this big long gap and a bunch of people are like, I'm done with Lost, right? They don't come back. Mm-hmm. But then a bunch of people come back for episode 7 and they're like, is this what the show is? Okay. Yeah. Never mind. I'm done. But I'm surprised that it's not in Portland, because I think that's a good episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you just see it really like hovering in that 12, 11.
Well, I think that's,
yeah, I mean, I guess
that's the frustration in not getting answers, because Not in Portland is a great episode, but it answers nothing.
Yeah.
So I could see how, if you're watching that, to be like, oh, maybe they're going to wrap this up. And you're like, nope. They're not going to wrap this
It's up. Weird. It's weird, too, because they missed Flashes Before Your Eyes. You know, like all those people that bailed on Lost after Not in Portland. It's like, but you missed the one that has some of the best mystery stuff, you know, where it's like, oh, my God, this guy can see the future.
He can alter time, maybe.
Yeah. So, I don't know. For me, yeah, I mean, you can see where people started to drop off. But, I mean, as we've been talking about, this run of season three was what solidified my fandom of the show.
Oh,
It really does feel like if it's a fork in the road, then it's a fork in the road where some of us chose the right answer and some other people left and missed out on some good stuff.
End of three is so huge.
It's insane. We have the title of the episode here, Enter 77, foreshadows the character's eventual jump into the year 1977. But I do want to talk about next week by asking my hosts, do we figure out about some genetic relations next week?
Yeah.
Neil,
yeah.
What are we doing?
We're going par avion, which I believe, doesn't that just mean for the birds? Or for birds? Or I don't know what that means. Anyway, it's a clear episode.
Avion always, like, isn't it airplane? Like, it's for the air, right?
It's for the air.
You write on, like, what do you write on airmail is par avion? Like, for the air mail.
By
airplane.
There we go. Yeah. I knew it was something that flew.
But I love that you're like, this is for the bird. This letter's for the bird.
Yeah. It's you know, it's a big Claire episode also.
It's
big Christian.
It's not a,
Shepherd episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not a good Claire episode. You get information, but you also have like weird goth Claire. It's not my fave. I will say that right now. But we do find out about.
And we get some good, from what, if I remember correctly, some decent on island stuff.
Yeah, I don't remember what happens on island. We'll find out.
We'll find out next week on the Storm Podcast. Until then, where can people find more of your work online? This week, we'll start with Joanna Robinson.
Find me on Twitter at JoWroteThis, or I am co-hosting a podcast called Truth vs. Hollywood with my pal, Dave Chen. You can go listen over there. Right now, this week, we are watching Argo.
Ooh.
I don't know why I said it like that. Argo, fuck yourself. That's what we're watching. So, you know, from the Oscar-winning screenwriter behind The Rise of Skywalker, Argo.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can get me on Twitter at rejects, at One Perfect Shot. I'm doing that. And don't forget to follow our show at Storm Podcast. It'll be fun.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. And just a reminder to those of you who might be reading online that The Legend of Korra is coming to Netflix. If you go to your podcast app and search for a little show called Republic City Dispatch, Joanna and I and Matt Patches and Devendra Hardawar, tech writer online, co-host of the Slash Filmcast, all came together and had a podcast where we watched every episode of that show and made a podcast episode about it. It's coming back around again, but that's important that you know it's there, because you know what will also be here sometime in 2022 is the entirety of the Storm doing Lost. Thank you so much for joining us, and please do not fall down.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.